it just register. There's a way things register with me, like that I know it's not an accident. I don't know if that was one of the first times, but I would definitely not forget that time. And like he said it, I don't remember what he looks like. I never saw him again. But when he said it, I knew it, and I knew I was gonna do it and never quit.
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us our review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifester that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. I'm so excited for today's guest. I have been intuiting for quite some time that I have to get him on here. And I met him back in my Laugh Factory days. I think I was 23 when I got that job, which is so interesting because I ended up getting it out of necessity. I was with, I think it was 3 years, I was with my Canadian actor boyfriend. And then it's the only time I've ever done this in my life. I ended up having an affair while doing a play with this other actor, and which was all my own shit that I've never looked at, my codependency and low self-worth. And I always had to move from one relationship to another seeking validation. So it had nothing to do with my partner at the time. We were actually in a really good place and he was a fantastic partner. And it really set both of us up on our journeys. I'm so proud of how far he's come and certainly how far I've come too. But he was actually supporting me financially when I was living with him to act, which makes this all way worse. This is like a public amends to him. I owe him one in person still, which we always talk about when we get together. I'll be giving that from my CODA days. But I ended up having to move out within a week. It was a rock bottom and I had to find my own apartment and a job. And this was the first job I got, which was really telling of where my worth was at because it was a pretty toxic environment. Though I still am great friends with the people that I worked with there. We actually had lunch a couple weeks after I recorded this episode, which I said, I have to reach out to them and go have lunch. And I really want to continue that because it's so funny that when I was sitting there having lunch with these girls, Mary, Sarah, Julianne's actually in this community, I realized and noticed it's one of the first times since all of my endocrine issues that I sat for hours. We were there for hours. I want to say 3 hours talking. And it was the first time I didn't feel exhausted after. And I really took a look at that and I was like, what's going on there? And I realized it's because it's a crowd that feels like family because of this time in our lives. And I didn't feel like I have to be something other than myself. And I don't often feel like that, but it still is residual from the way I grew up and perfectionism and codependency that I feel like I have to at least be energetically on rather than exhausted. And with them, I could really be myself. And so this is such a full circle episode of really remembering the person I was back in those days, connecting with who feels like family, and then having this conversation with Ian Edwards just really felt like home and felt like re-meeting an aspect and part of me that I haven't been around for a long time. And that was really beautiful. So I want to introduce today's guest, Ian Edwards, who's a comedian. You certainly know him if you've checked out his hour-long Comedy Central that he released this past year called Ian Talk. He's been a writer on some amazing shows, including Blackish, The Carmichael Show, Crashing on HBO, Friends from College, and Two Broke Girls, which is really full circle because we've had Beth Bears on this podcast. And it's always been really an honor to watch how far Whitney Cummings has come since seeing her perform at the Laugh Factory back then. And then, of course, moving on to doing Two Broke Girls and everything she's accomplished since. So really full circle episode. I was so excited to have Ian on, and I talk about this in the episode because anybody who's been around comics, we were very intimately around comics. I think I worked there for, I think it was 4 years, 3 or 4 years, and you get to know them quite well. And they're pretty, as you hear, they're pretty dark and traumatic people. Like, they've had a lot of trauma. There's a lot of darkness going on. And most often than not, you know, they were always trying to hit on us and sleep with us. So Ian was always such a diamond in the rough, you know, so respectful, so interesting. He's vegan, his background's so interesting. He's an Aquarian, and we just both, I think he's a rat, like me, an Aquarian rat. And I always just felt so safe around him, so connected, so seen when we would, you know, like go out to friends or something afterwards. He was just really, really grounded and loving and beautiful. And I feel like he's a massive expander in this community, or he will be one for many, because he's so authentic and he's stayed so true to himself and so authentic. So let's get into this episode. It's a journey. He drops a lot of knowledge on us, a lot of things we can learn from him. And yeah, it's with a really heartfelt thank you to having Ian on this episode. Let's get into it. Where I like to start with everybody, Ian, is tell us about your cultural background and upbringing.
Oh, okay. My cultural background, I'm bringing like a... from a Jamaican family, but I was raised in England. So then there's a lot of English things that I have with me. But at the same time, while I was growing up in England, sorry, my family's Jamaican. So the food we ate, and my cousins and my relatives, and a lot of the people I hung out with were Jamaican. And I stayed in Jamaica till in England till I was like 9 years old, and then actually moved to Jamaica with my family. So then there's a lot of like Jamaican background, and religiously it was like the Church of England.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what do they call it? Because it's almost like the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
What do they call that thing? When you're 13, you're confirmed.
Oh.
And then you do all the blood of Christ and all that stuff.
Yeah. What is that called in the Catholic Church? I don't remember.
I forgot.
What is it? Is it confirmation?
Yeah, confirmation.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Had one?
Yeah, I had one of those. Yeah.
And so even though your family, they're from the island, were they Catholic, or you just did it to fit in?
We weren't Catholics. It's Church of England. So I guess back in the day, England was Catholic. But then I think it was Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Wanted to divorce his wife.
Yeah, yeah.
So he switched the religion.
And cut off her head.
Of the country and cut off her head.
Yeah, a couple of them.
He cut off a couple of wives' heads and stuff like that. So then it's Church of England, but it's basically Catholic, but they just wanted control. They just wanted to wrestle control of their country from Catholicism. So that's what it is. So then Jamaica used to be a colony of England. So a lot of people there are like Pentecostal. They call it Pentecostal here, but it's just Church of England.
From colonization.
Yeah,
colonization. Right. And did your family actually practice? They participated?
Yeah, we went to church.
Like, wow.
My father was more Church of England Pentecostal. My mother, her father was actually a Baptist preacher. He was a cop and a Baptist preacher, and he had his own church.
How amazing. So, wow.
Yeah.
Did you, growing up, especially when you guys relocated back to Jamaica, did your mom keep any of the old Jamaican, like, herbalism? Or when you were sick, for instance, did she do anything special?
Oh, that's funny that you asked that, because I just got off the phone with her, and I meant to thank her, because like, we had such a healthy upbringing. Like, everything people are doing right now, she did with us when we were kids. Like,
juicing. I mean, like, that's all honestly Rastafarian culture. Mm. I mean, I don't know if you had that influence.
She's not even Rastafarian. It's just like, they were like these bush teas that they would force us to drink that would like kind of clean. She was always cleaning us out.
Wow.
Or giving us...
like laxative
forcing us to take
drinks.
Something. Yeah, laxative, like natural teas and just whatever. Just healthy shit. Like, when I look back and like, it's almost like how, I think the world was like that. Then we went away from it. So it seems like now that we're going back to it, it seems like new discoveries, but it's just old shit. Yeah, she was doing that stuff with us from from the beginning.
And did your grandma or grandmothers, did they practice any herbalism and stuff like that?
Just normal people were religious, superstitious.
Yeah.
Like they believed in ghosts.
Yeah.
That's the type of island it was, like religious, and what's the word?
Superstitious.
Superstitious.
Yeah.
And also they believed in like a lot of natural, like bush tea remedies and teas and stuff like that. And then we grew a lot of the stuff that we ate anyway because we had enough land in the backyard to, like, to grow corn or callaloo, which is like spinach, or we had mango trees and sugar cane and just, we could avocados, pomegranates, just, so we just ate a lot of stuff that was just like just around.
Local and natural and organic, all that. Yeah. Am I correct that I remember you were a vegetarian or vegan when I knew you back?
Yeah, I'm vegan now, yeah.
What, and how long have you been a vegan?
I would say I've been a vegan probably like 15 years-ish.
Wow. Yeah. And what was it that initially, is it for animal rights? Is it for health?
Both? Nah, it's for health.
It is for health?
Yeah, it's for health. Like when I was a kid, so here's this is something stupid. When I was a kid, KFC was a treat.
Yeah, it was like you got to, like even McDonald's when I was growing up. It was exciting.
It was exciting and tastes amazing. And but we were poor, so I was like, man, whenever I grow up, I'm just going to eat this shit forever.
All day, every day.
All day, every day. And then I did start to, and I like realized it didn't taste the same.
Mm.
And it wasn't the ingredients. It was like the actual chicken itself. I was like, just meat just tastes different. They're doing stuff to it.
Mm.
And I don't want any parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
So just to be healthy.
Right, just leave it clear. Alone. I love that. That's so interesting, too. It was sort of intuitive in a way.
Yeah,
that
in
you
a
could
way,
just
tell. Yeah, you could tell. Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, why this thing that I loved when I was a kid, like, I used to look forward to every bite. All of a sudden, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
And it, you know.
It's such a great response because you always hear, you know, just varying but charged responses. And that's a really intuitive process of knowing it's just not good for you anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And you're an Aquarius.
Yeah.
And you're...
How'd you know that?
I think I remember that, honestly. And then we obviously researched you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then are you a rat in Chinese astrology zodiac?
I don't know. Is that good?
I am. I'm an Aquarius rat.
You are?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
So we're on the same plane.
Yeah, I'll be a rat.
Yeah. It's the year of the rat.
It's the year of the rat. What does rat mean?
Well, I'm not good at this because I'm not that invested.
You're not that Chinese.
I'm not that Chinese. Right. You're right. Exactly. And all I know, the things that I identify is that we're really savvy. We're very busy and that we're very savvy with saving, like building nests and things like that.
I'm into that.
Are you the same?
Yeah,
you identify?
Yeah.
So anybody who does actually really know Chinese astrology is probably like, she has no idea what she's talking about right now.
But they could help out.
It could help out.
They could respond to this and help out.
Yeah, you guys could send us something and maybe we would be able to read it or know about it. Okay.
How do you know if you're a rat? Like, there's a certain day?
It's the year you were born.
Oh, okay.
And then I think there are elements. So, for instance, my fiance is a dragon and you're like a wood dragon or a fire dragon.
Oh.
So I don't even know which one I am. But I do know that the rat and dragon are a very powerful couple. So that's something to
hopefully
know.
Hopefully I'm a rat.
Yeah,
most
and hopefully you're looking for
rats.
A dragon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, nobody wants to be a rat.
But, you know, I'll take it.
I know. Yeah. I know I'm there. I'm gonna own it.
Yeah.
So one thing that I know that we really wanted to get in with you, get into with you, is that as a comedian in today's current climate, it's so fucking sensitive in the world right now.
Right.
Every which way, it's so sensitive. And I really like about your comedy that you touch on everything and you're so authentic. And a huge part, a huge part of manifestation, I would argue the most important part of manifestation that I discovered is everything we're doing is to get back into our totally authentic self and sense of being. And I think that today's climate, it's really hard to be that, whether somebody is afraid of offending someone or outshining something or undershining something. How do you approach that as somebody who does have a darker, drier sense of humor and comedy? How does that come up for you?
I don't know. I couldn't see me doing comedy any other way.
Right.
Like once, you know, one of the things in comedy is like you have to find your voice. And once I found it, you know, just like knowing not to eat chicken or just even knowing that comedy was the thing for me to do, like, I know that this is the way for me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just never question it, or there's nothing going to stop me from doing it. And then the more restrictions they put on you, there's ways around them
mm-hmm.
that'll make them regret those restrictions.
Let's dive in.
You know what I'm
saying? I love what you just said. Mm-hmm. First, tell me about, and then I'm going to loop back around, mm-hmm. how you even got, I call it the ping, to know that you're a comedian and that's what you're going to do. That's your thing.
Oh, okay. So this might be interesting. So I'm working at Burger King years ago. I'm on a drive-thru. So one of the things is, so when I moved to America, I'm like 17. I'm like trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, you're in another country.
Literally.
Literally, you know? And it's the first time I'm around like Black people who I don't even have anything in common with. I have some things like skin color. But normally, if I'm in England, like, and there's Black people, they're Jamaican,
mm-hmm.
they're British, there's that. And then I'm in Jamaica, there's Black people, they're Jamaican, we like the same sports, the same food, the same everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we watch the same things, so you can, same music. Then you come to America, there's different music, different food, basically talk English, but different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you just, and then there's different races. So you're just catching up, you know,
mm-hmm.
and people are into different things. So there's one guy at the job, his name was Greg Ellis, and he was funny as shit. And I noticed that when you're around him, time goes fast and it's a fun time at the job. So I was like, I realized that I was just so frozen. I wasn't tapping into my funny side.
Mm.
So then that gave me the realization to just relax, just have fun. Joke around. So I started doing that. And then maybe a few years later, I'm still at the Burger King. I'm taking orders on a drive-thru. I'm just clowning
mm-hmm.
and just taking orders. One customer pulls around and he said, "Hey man, did you just take my order?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You're funny, man. You should do comedy."
Mm-hmm.
And I never, as soon as he said that, I was like, "Oh shit, that's what I'm going to do." I never thought of it before.
Was it a full body experience, or how did it register to you?
It just registered. There's a way things register with me,
uh-huh.
like that I know it's not an accident. I don't know if that was one of the first times, but I would definitely not forget that time.
Uh-huh.
And like he said it, I don't remember what he looks like. I never saw him again. But when he said it, I knew it, and I knew I was going to do it and never quit.
And was it a mental knowing, or did you feel something in your body?
I felt something.
Okay.
But it was just like, it wasn't like, you know how I'm even keeled?
Mm-hmm.
It came that way, like, that's it.
Calm, and it's just
calm,
there.
And that's there, and this is it. So this is what we're going to do. So now how are we going to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no question, nothing.
I would argue,
mm-hmm.
and so obviously in the intro, I'll have explained how we know each other and
right.
all of that.
Hilarious.
But I'll argue that having even been an actor,
mm-hmm.
comedy to me looks like the most excruciating road to go down. I mean, it's so intense. And I got to know you mm-hmm. already in the precipice of starting to make it, you know, mm-hmm. and making it, because you're already on the stage and
right.
the Laugh Factory and Comedy House. What's it called? The comedy store.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
it,
yeah.
right? That you're already at that point, but there's so much in between that had to have been just so fucking insane to navigate and painful and intense.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, when the guy said that and it registered, like nothing else mattered. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So then I was just locked into like getting better. So then everything just is a part of it. So it's like, this is just a part of it. I bombed again.
Mm-hmm.
This is frustrating. Like, first I'm not good. Then after a while I kill.
Mm-hmm.
But then I bomb again. I thought when I killed, that'll be, I'll just keep killing.
Mm-hmm.
But then now you don't know which way the show is going to go now. Because first, you knew it was going to all be bad. Then you're like,
You get
now
a taste.
It can be good.
Yeah.
But I don't know if tonight is going to be good or bad. And you don't know until it's over. And then you keep going. And then there's just so many other things that we put ourselves through.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just realize, have fun. Like, I just knowing that it was going to work out somehow if you just keep doing it the way you're supposed to do it.
Authentically.
Yeah. Just let me know everything is going to be fine. This is all a part of it. And just keep going. And just accept everything. And then comics and people, period, in life make things harder on mm-hmm. themselves. So anybody just doing comedy now or just anything, it's like, I think once you started taking, not making your life hard on yourself and moments hard on yourself, then things became easier.
What were your tools? Because I think this is relatable to everybody. Right. When somebody gets a little taste of success and being loved for who they are, what they're trying to achieve, mm-hmm. it can almost be self-sabotaging. Like you're saying, you know, for some people, they can be like, how do I top that? Or if I fail, will I ever get back there? Or how do I continue? Or how doesn't this just knock me down for good? What are your tools when you were navigating that and still when you do?
Oh, I think it's always simple. Like there's a, like you think about how did you get to where you are now,
mm-hmm.
right? So you just think about the first step. And then, so you did the first step, then the second step, then the third step, and you built it block by block.
Mm-hmm.
So then now, so I just did a special and I want to do
one hour special. This
yeah.
is like
there
a huge deal.
Yeah. So
congrats.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm bowing.
Yeah.
Even though you can't see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now I'm like, I want to do another special and I want it to be better than the last special. Mm-hmm. But how did I make the first special? It was a joke by joke. So then now I'm just going to go joke by joke again. I'm not going to like look at this big, massive task. I'm going to like just do it piece by piece, because I know if you do it piece by piece, then it'll end up being what I want it to be.
Right.
So then that's the approach for everything. So
it really is.
It's just like, all right, step by step, piece by piece. Like for me, it is. I just don't get overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I think it's the most sound advice out there.
Right,
it's really, if we all just did it like
good
that.
Answer.
Yeah, done. We can die now.
Answer to life.
Done.
Yeah, done.
You're like the wise sage. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome, world. Yeah.
So getting back to the authentic piece, I really love that you said, you know, I'll paraphrase, but basically, people want to put you in a box or a corner. They want to catch you if you're saying something that's maybe offensive or outshining, mm-hmm. but you can go about it a way that will make them sorry that they did that. And I think that's a really, mm-hmm. it's a good strategy,
right.
really. And it's lucky to have that skill set. What does that look like, for instance, if you were to give us an example?
Like, I guess they talk about there's certain words that you can't use now, or they are bad, and then they'll get canceled if you say those words.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just make up a word that's worse than that word.
Great.
That is not cancelable, but it's actually like my stand-up is like, I dig myself a hole in front of the audience and then I climb out of it.
You do, and you do it well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So they might not like what I'm saying in the beginning, but where I'm going, but by the end of it, like, you know, he might have a point.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing to make people look at things just a different way.
Yeah. So it's all perspective.
It's all perspective.
Like
yeah.
if somebody wants...
Like this perspective, yeah.
It really is. And what yeah. you're saying is if somebody wants to push the envelope and be themselves and be super authentic, it's really about just being able to shift the perspective.
Yeah.
I would argue too, watching a few, you know, I mean, you touch on everything too, like where a lot of people won't go, you know, and I love the joke that, what was I watching beforehand? The one... Like the riot piece. I mean, it's a whole, what do you call it? When it's a whole,
When it's like a bit?
Yeah, a bit. Yeah, yeah. It's like it keeps building and building and then there's mm-hmm. a few payoffs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's exactly how you approach it. We all start going, where's he going with this? It's stressful, but you're giving them like a payoff
right.
along the way. And then, you know, there's a really good thought piece. And
mm-hmm.
for somebody in the real world who's kind of approaching things that are sensitive or mm-hmm. again, feeling like we're being too much, you know, a lot of people's authentic nature can be really funny, very beautiful, very charismatic, right. you know, but we're afraid of being too offensive, or maybe we've worked hard and we've gotten nice things. We don't want to
lose them.
just don't want to make other people feel bad or outshiny. Right. What would you say about that?
You said about the outshiny part, or as far as outshiny is, like, I just recommend everybody just be themselves.
I think so too.
And then wherever things fall, they fall, because you can pretend to fit something for somebody or for a group of people, and they're not like you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, okay, just let it all hang. Plus, you know, like Trump just like killed a general from, is it Iran or Iraq?
It's not good.
Right. So
yeah.
I'm like, that just let me know, oh, I can't care about anything or take anything serious, because there's powers beyond mine that could just change my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we go to war, then my life is changed. Mm-hmm. If we don't go to war, then it continues somewhere. If something else happens or some catastrophe, then, so it's like, why not just do you, not take everything serious and have some fun? And I'm best when I'm just relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
So just relax and I'll be able to react and think at capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Then like pay attention and focus on what everybody else is doing.
What about haters? Do you get haters?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you deal with them?
It hurts a little bit, but then you're like, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And then people, and then you realize, like, I'm Black.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what's a hater? Like a racist?
Mm-hmm.
I know that person's hurting because
totally.
They're trying to hurt me. So I was walking down the street. It was mm-hmm. me. And I don't know if you know Yasser Lesser,
mm-mm.
but he's another comic. And Mo Mandel.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Jewish white cop.
Mm-hmm.
We're walking from Mel's to the comic store.
Oh, this is in L.A.?
This is in L.A.
Jesus.
And we're walking at sunset. It's nighttime. This van drives by. The guy yells, nigga. You know, and then we all turn around. We see the guy in the van, and the van is gone. And then I turn to Mo. I say, hey, Mo, you're the only white guy here. And we start punching Mo. And then we all started laughing.
Yeah.
Like, that person's in pain, but
totally.
They're not going to ruin my day
mm-hmm.
with their slang. Like, it's like, now what are you going to do if I don't respond to it?
Totally.
Nothing. You that was the last bullet in your gun. So I'm good.
That's a beautiful perspective. What about, do you get haters
mm-hmm.
like who, after your jokes, when you're done, you know, and it's not just like, they're actually just hating on you and your material ever?
Yeah, there's some people that will never be on board,
yeah.
but that's life. I just know, you know, for the most part, a lot of people are into it, or enough are into it. And then I just know, just realistically, everybody's not going to like me.
Totally.
And I've accepted that.
I love
it. So it's like, it's whatever. I mean, you feel bad a little bit, but like realistically overall, that's just life. So I'm fine.
God, you're so even keeled. Ian, it's
Maybe.
Amazing. You're so inspiring. You're expansive for me. I mean, we even experience it. We'll get it with reviews and things
yeah.
like that. And yeah, I guess it's really just, I think the real takeaway for everybody is you have to double down on your authenticity.
Yeah, yeah.
In, you know, and I think I'm still afraid to fully do it all the way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, being more in the public eye now and stuff like that, it's scary, you know.
Nah, don't be scared. People, I mean, the beauty of you saying that is the beauty of the honesty of that.
Yeah.
But you're thriving being you, so that should tell you even more to be you.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
It's a great way to put it. Was your mom really even keeled, and your dad?
Yeah. Now my dad was laid back.
Mm-hmm.
He just like did his thing, went to work. You know, he believed in like, you know, the work system. If you work hard, stuff will come. So he didn't say a lot. So you just watched him do it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think my work ethic comes from that. My mother they just dug in there and just got shit done.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
What brought them to the States?
I think the Jamaican economy was kind of tanking at
mm-hmm.
the time. So my mother came first. She was like a nanny for like some people in Manhattan.
Mm.
And she saved some money and then sponsored us and then brought us all back over.
They did.
Yeah.
And so you landed when you came to the States in Manhattan.
No, in Long Island.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long were you on the East Coast before you came west?
Oh, wow. Yeah, wow.
Wild.
Yeah. Like I grew up there.
It kind of feels like that. I bet if you landed at 17.
But it also feels like I grew up here too, because I've been here a long time too.
And did you buy a place?
Yeah.
You did in the Valley?
I had one in the Valley.
Yeah. So that joke's true.
Yeah. That joke's true. Yeah.
I mean, about like parts of it.
No, that really happened.
Really?
Oh, yeah. All of it's happened.
So that's legit. Like you had it sold. It was in escrow. And then they backed out. But you had like sold your furniture and everything.
Yeah. Like it was in storage. And I gave some across to the church across the street.
Your material is true.
Yeah. I had to live in an empty house. Until we got a new buyer and everything.
Wow. Jesus.
And I didn't even get the deposit.
Really? Nah. You were just kind?
The realtor screwed up.
Oh, no. Because after contingencies are over, like they've got to, you're going to keep it.
Exactly.
Wow.
So I didn't even get anything for the inconvenience.
So that realtor was done.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you ended up buying somewhere else?
Yeah, I'm in Las Feliz now.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Where at? What's your address? No, I'm kidding.
I'll tell you after.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Congrats. How long ago?
Like 2015 or 16. The years, everything's all blended together.
Yeah.
I can't remember anything.
Do you feel like you set an intention when you were buying the place of what you wanted? You manifested it?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Because I'm in the Valley and I'm like writing on a show in Burbank.
Mm-hmm.
So in the morning, I had to get up and get to Burbank. Finish writing on the show. And this is like two years in a row.
Which show was this? Because you've written on a few.
One was like Two Broke Girls, and then the other one was like Blackish.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I go to the shows. After I get off, you know, then comedy. I have to do my stand-up. And it's in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So then my choices were to drive back to Reseda, get a nap, and then come back out.
Mm-hmm.
And then come back home.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did sometimes. Or the other choice was just to stay out there. And
in your car the whole time,
in
or like
car,
friends.
Like a homeless person or a bug, some friend.
I remember. Yeah, for auditions when I lived in Pasadena. Yeah. So and then work.
Yeah, and then work. So then you're like, you have a house, but you get there late at night.
Sleep,
wake up, and then repeat. So then I was like, but the market was down at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, shit. I want to move, and I knew where I wanted to move to. And I was like, sometimes when I just know what I want to do and I feel it, it can happen. So then I was eating some food at Low Cali. And I was next door, there's a realtor place. I started like looking at the listings.
On the wall.
On the wall.
Yeah, or window.
Yeah. And then I went inside. I just started asking some questions. And then, because I had no belief that the market, like, I was like, you can't sell your place because the market's down. You won't make any money or you'll just lose. So you won't be able to move. But then they looked at my place and said, oh, yeah, you could make some money if you sold it. And then I was like, for real? And then I just set the whole thing in order and just sold it. Then the incident happened.
Yeah.
Right?
We'll have to link that joke below.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
thanks. And then I couldn't find a place. I stayed at a friend's house in Mid-City, which was a great place to live. Yes, very central.
Yeah.
For like a year and a half until I found this place. And it's like, yeah.
Do you feel like it was what you were looking for?
Yeah, because here's the funny thing. I had a townhouse in Reseda. And I always went, man, this place is great. If they could just airlift it. And drop it where
that's
I want to live.
That's how I felt about our Echo Park house.
Oh, where?
Yeah, I love the house.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to live in Echo Park anymore.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So then, to me, this is like it was airlifted and dropped.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's almost identical in a way.
Almost identical. Two bedrooms, 2.5 baths. Yeah.
And did
downstairs, yeah.
Because I'm like thinking through my formula and mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, he walked into the place. He was expanded. He mm-hmm. listened to his ping to go look at I'm just walking through my mm-hmm. stuff for the people knowing and listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
What
What about, like, do you feel there was a kismetness in finding that actual place in Los Feliz, since it was so similar to your old place, or it just popped up one day?
Well, let me see. I'm trying to figure out, like, what I realized is, like, you don't have to have anything. You just have to know what you want and start heading in that direction.
And do you think it's like step by step? Like you do with comedy, like you did with comedy?
I just know you have to start heading in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's step by step, like one step, two step, then fine. But I got to start. I had to like look at the listings. Then I had to walk in the place just to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
Like those people forced me to give them my address so that they could look it up. Because in my head, I'm like, there's no way.
Yeah.
The market's down. And they looked at my place and said, you could make this. And I'm like, you serious? So
did you end up making what they said?
Yeah, around that. Yeah.
Wow.
It wasn't like a lot, but it was enough to not lose money and be able to get out of there and move to where I wanted to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What else do you feel like in your life you've manifested that's really clearly what you set out for?
Well, so here's the funny thing. So I'm not married.
Yeah.
When I was like 7 years old, I was watching TV. And I saw these people eating. They were all friends. They were drinking wine. They were eating dinner. It was like in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, for some reason, I'm like 7 years old. I'm like, that's what I want. I want to just always be at dinner parties or eating and drinking with friends late at night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want a family.
Wow. Right? You knew that then.
I felt that then.
Wow.
Right? But I said, that's what I want.
Yeah.
Right? So then I forget about that. I start doing comedy. Like I grew up, moved from England to Jamaica, from Jamaica to England to Jamaica, from Jamaica to New York.
Yeah.
Get the thing about comedy, start doing comedy and doing comedy there. Then I moved to LA. And then it hit me one day, like I remembered, you know, the movie that I saw, this TV show and the people eating. And I was like, oh shit, that thing that I wanted back then, I've been doing it because ever since I started doing comedy, every night, me and the comics would go eat at some diner or some restaurant. And I did it when I was a Long Island comic, when I was a Manhattan comic, and now I lived in LA. Like I've been out to eat and drink with friends so many times. I'm not married. And like, even comedy was a part of me ending up. So my thing was, I didn't always.
No, you're like nailing on the head what we all believe that's listening.
Like I just, I always get what I want. I just don't always know what I want.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The clarity.
The clarity of it. So once I realized that, like I said, I got to focus more and what I want so I can get it even sooner.
Yeah.
You know?
And just, that clarity of knowing.
Yeah, the clarity of knowing, yeah.
I'm quickly interrupting this episode with Ian to share a My Magnetic story, which are the testimonials shared by our members in the pathway under the motivation. You can find the link below to read a lot more to help expand you. I'm living as the real me, take it or leave it. I'm so excited to have finally discovered what I truly want. Freedom's been coming up a lot lately in my journaling. I kept asking myself, freedom from what? My career, relationships, debt, everyday stress of life? Last night, it finally hit me. I want freedom to finally be me and to enjoy each unique quality I bring to this lifetime. Growing up, my mom always told me over and over I needed to change. It was always something, making me feel like I wasn't good enough. I've done a lot of unblocked inner child, I've done money, and recently started the daily reprogramming exercise. I've spent the last, 33 years changing. Today, I'm done. It's been the most rewarding day of my life. I'm living as the real me, take it or leave it. How liberating. I love this. We usually share what people have manifested through this, but something we often talk about as the team is that this work is so much more than manifesting a house or a partner or a career or a money sum or a trip. In fact, a lot of people would come to me when they would work with me wanting to manifest those things, but then they would start the workshops, especially unblocked inner child, shadow, no, and how to manifest. And they would come back to me in another session and be like, whoa, yeah, I do want X, Y, and Z, but nothing's as valuable as how I'm changing into my authentic self, into being worthy, no longer having to people please or be a perfectionist. And that is really what this work is about. So we wanted to showcase that today. If you're interested in checking out the work, go ahead and use our code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, for $20 off your first month of the pathway, which is our all-encompassing membership program that has every workshop we've created that walks you through every process of manifestation, or to receive $20 off any of the 2.0 a la carte courses.
What about something that I have to say, and I'll probably have said this in the intro, is as a waitress at the Laugh Factory, you're just like prime gay. Everybody wants to sleep with you, or they're trying to sleep with you. That's all. Like,
forget it. You were hot.
Yeah, all the chicks. No, thank you so much.
You're talking about the comics.
Well, no, as I'm saying the comics, like everybody's just trying to sleep with the waitresses, right? Yeah, and everybody else, right? Yeah, yeah. And like the people at the show.
Yeah.
But you, and obviously Al Madrigal, families didn't stop everybody, but Al was one of those.
Hilarious.
And yeah, like we're so respectful. And I always remember like how just kind and respectful. And I really appreciated that. I mean, what's sort of your moral code when it comes to, because we have a lot of listeners, right, that are like manifesting dating and, you know, manifesting partnership. What's your moral compass when you're navigating the dating experience, when you know you don't want a family, you don't want something deeply committed? How do you navigate that in the dating world?
Well, I'm definitely honest about that.
Great.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I'm honest about that. And then some people, like, I think the world that I'm in with comedy and the energy of that, like, I run into people who have similar, like, that's what they want too, or it's just too early to tell if they're the one or I'm the one. So, you know, you can still, like, date and have some fun and go out. As far as morals, you're saying, I just tell them.
You're just super upfront.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
like,
so
we have
important.
A conversation and we talk and like, yeah.
I'm not looking for, and has that ever changed for you? Do you see that changing in the future? You think that's your life?
There's a few times it's changed.
Yeah.
Like I was in a relationship and I was like, all right. But then it didn't work out. So I was like,
whatever.
Yeah.
Back to it.
Back to it.
Back to that TV show.
Yeah. I would never say never.
Yeah.
But for the most part, never.
I love that. You know what I love that you know that. And I love that you have clarity in that. And again, you're open.
Mm-hmm.
What about being in relationship or dating? Do you find that on a soul level? Because it sounds like you're defying. I mean, it's natural Aquarian, but it sounds like you're defying societal stereotypes about being in a relationship, being in a family. Mm-hmm. What is it that you personally crave? You're actually authentic again in another spot of your life. What are you actually craving when you're connecting with somebody?
Like, I get why people want to be in a relationship. Like, even the last relationship, like, there's closeness. We took trips. We were great company with each other. We had a lot of fun. So then, and then I discovered a lot of California, you know, like, in my last relationship. Because then I was like, I'd never been to Big Sur.
Wow.
And one day she's like, we should go to Big Sur. And then it was crazy. Like, you're a comic, which for some reason, like, I felt like I was cutting school to just take a day off
in the middle of the week. Because it's a hustle.
To go to Big Sur.
Yeah.
And I was like, first of all, why does this shit feel like school and I'm cutting out of it? But it's not even a conventional job. But
yeah.
It feels like it's a conventional job. So that's some other stuff I got to deal with.
No, I love that. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think every artist, I know when I acted, I felt that way.
Right.
It was like, no, that's a distraction. You're slacking off. You've got to be like doing scene work right now. Or for you, it'd be a show that night or whatever.
Yeah. Just not having, knowing that I wasn't going to do a show that night.
Oh.
But meanwhile, everybody else was going to be on stage.
Yeah.
And then we drove up there and it was a great day. We didn't even stay. We drove back. It was just great. And I'm like, I got to do shit like that more often.
Yeah.
So those are the great things about relationships. Like, sometimes I talk to somebody in the audience and I look at them and say, so how many, you two are together. So how many times were you divorced before you met her?
And, love that.
And they'll start laughing. But I get why, like, I guess the point is I get why people want to be in relationships, even though I most of the time don't.
Like, yeah.
It's addictive. There's parts to it.
Yeah.
And you get back, you get with somebody else so that you can have the parts of it that you do like. And hopefully that both of you can maximize or just be about the parts about relationships that you do like.
Yeah.
Until it works or it doesn't work.
Totally.
You know?
Navigating that last experience, like both of you exiting the relationship, was that a really conscious and healthy exiting, or did it turn out to be unhealthy?
It was definitely, the whole thing was healthy.
Awesome.
But even the bad parts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like a lot of communication.
Well,
hearing everybody's side.
There was that. And well, let me just say, going into the relationship, I was like, this might not work. And not because I thought it might not work.
Yeah.
Maybe I did think there were parts of it that was like dodgy. But I was like, I'm going to give this my all.
Yeah.
Like,
wow.
I felt like in the past, I'd just been in relationships like 2 years and I'd be like, I'm done for some reason. So I was like, I don't want to do this like that. I got to be more open. So then I was more forgiving of things.
Mm.
Like I found places and ways to love her and not be done after certain things the way I would have been done before. So I was like, you know, so it just really, I said, I'm just going to go open and see what happens. If it doesn't work, I'll definitely get something from this. And if it does work, I'll get something from this. So it was like a non-lose situation.
Mm.
So that's how I'd like to just approach anything. It's everybody's looking for, like, if you have a relationship, like I see people get divorced after 20 years. And people say it's tragic or sad. Say, but you were with somebody for 20 years. What were you going to be doing besides that, you know? And since you didn't, and this was it, like, what are the good things? There's so many times, like, I would never get back with my ex, ever. But I still enjoy, in my mind, moments, great moments that we had. You know what I mean? I still, it's like, separately, I go to Coachella, right? And Coachella is something pleasant that happens in April, but it stays with me all year.
Yeah.
So then anything that was pleasant about the relationship still stays with me.
I just think this is really metaphorical for a lot of aspects of life.
Oh, yeah?
To be that open and honestly, like, not having societal attachments and knowing that you're going to glean some good, some growth out of it. I mean, that's applicable for everything in life.
Yeah. It's like the only way to look at it is like, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
Because any other way is just going to cause torture to yourself. Like, people just want to, listen, if the relationship lasts, it doesn't mean it's working. You know what I mean?
I agree 1,000%.
It doesn't mean it's working. Just so, say you die married, but you should have gotten out of it, you know, and you didn't learn that and you didn't realize that, you didn't react to it. And
there wasn't the growth.
There wasn't
right?
any growth. So
So
wherever the growth is,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
I agree.
Yeah.
Do you have a spiritual practice?
I meditate sometimes.
What does that look like for you when you're doing it?
There's like different ones. Like sometimes I meditate to music, sometimes affirmations, that sometimes I'll just affirmate myself, and then sometimes just silence, you know what I mean?
Just so nothing.
Nothing.
Where has been a point where you've used affirmations or meditation and you've seen a result from it, or you've seen an evolution from it?
There were times, like, say the relationship. So here's a funny thing.
Yeah.
Like, I meditated before I went in a relationship. I said, should I do this?
Wow.
And the response was no.
What do you think that was?
I did that shit anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah. What do you think was the caution?
Exactly what happened.
Right, right. That it wasn't going to work out.
That it wasn't
going
to work out.
Yeah.
But the great thing about going against it, like if I didn't go against it, right? And I said, all right, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Then I would always wonder, was that message really right?
Right. And now you know it was.
But now I know it was. So now I know. Listen always.
See, this is such a good takeaway.
Yeah.
You know, and I really believe in that. Like, we do have to test that. I call it running into the fire.
Yeah, yeah.
When you know better and your intuition. Really hot? Yeah. Is it going to burn me?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, so fire works like fire. Now I don't have to burn my hand in fire
and
ever again.
I never have to ever underestimate that fire will always burn you. Do you have that check-in with yourself a lot? Intuitive check-ins, like about shows or should I do this project?
Decent amount. Yeah. A decent amount. Could be more, but decent amount. Yeah.
Do you feel like you've ever settled with work in the last maybe 5 years where you shouldn't have done? And you don't have to be specific to the project, but examples?
For the most part, like, I'm freer. Like, like I was writing on shows. I could be making a lot of money writing on shows right now, but I want to be outside and freer. And instead of writing, you know, we have your medical and, you know, healthcare benefits and your pension and all that stuff building up. I'm not doing that so that I can go on the road, do stand up. I just did a special, work towards doing another one and build up a reputation that way, which right now pays less. But, you know, I'm manifesting, I'm walking in the direction of making it be more worth than
the glass ceiling of writing.
Yeah, yeah.
This brings so many questions to me. Do you feel like when you said no to writing, like being in the room, and I just, to my understanding, those are like sometimes 12, 16 hour days, right? Like you're on a project, it's a whole thing. Whenever you said no, or you made the conscious decision, you really want to be on the road, did more stuff start to come to you in comedy?
Yeah. Cause then I said, I'm going to do a special. Right. So I'm like last year.
Yeah. Tell us about that manifestation process.
So then it's been on my mind. I did an album, but when I did the album, I was writing on Black-ish. So I couldn't get to tour and push the album. So then I left. There was some issues at Black-ish. And I'm like, these issues are telling me to go do stand-up. And it also, I was getting paid as a staff writer at Black-ish, even though I'd written on shows before. So one thing, I took the job because at the time, before Black-ish, I was writing on shows and I wanted to get back into sitcom. And I felt that and I knew that and that's what I wanted.
And you mean acting?
No, like writing.
Writing sitcoms, okay.
So then out of the blue, Morgan Murphy calls me. She's like, you have an agent? I'm like, nah. She's like, you have a manager? I said, yeah. She's like, damn, what's the guy that created part of Michael? Why can't I?
Created, what did he create?
Sex in the City.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
It's just two guys.
But there's a main guy that everybody... It's the same person who produced Two Broke Girls, right?
Yes.
Or who, with Whitney, like, helped that show come
exactly.
about. Right. We've had Beth on the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dope.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
She live like, around here or something?
She will...
Is that her horse?
Yes. Her horses are... I think Whitney's horse is around here, too. They're in Topanga. But she actually, I think, just manifested her second home. And we have to have her back to go through that process. Sad. But she does all the work.
Yeah,
we're going to make you do it.
I'm down.
But continue. Sorry.
So I just, that's what I knew I wanted, you know, what gig. So Morgan calls. She said, Michael Patrick King.
That's it.
Yeah. Wants to meet with you. I'm like, what the fuck? Like out of the blue. And she's like, then she explained, she showed him a joke that I did. And my name came up in the room and boom. So now I get the meeting. I'm working on a sitcom. But this is something that I wanted. I can't remember how long it took to happen, but it felt like the thing that I do when I know what I want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it comes.
And it comes. Mm-hmm. So then that happened. And then I went to Black-ish. And then now I want, and I've written on some other shows after Black-ish, mm-hmm. but they fit into, and Black-ish, like Two Broke Girls was punch up, mm-hmm. but it paid a writer's salary. Mm-hmm. And then Black-ish was like staff writer, which mm-hmm. is good money, but it's just like basic. And I'm like, everybody in the room was further ahead than me, mm-hmm. like within their titles and the money that they were making. And I'm like, I've been writing just as long as these people. And I said, and so then I leave, but then the next show that I get, because I didn't really want the job, mm-hmm. pays me
it
more
offers.
Than what offers more
yes.
than if I'd stayed there.
Yes.
And then the job after that offered more because of that. So because they was just like 8 weeks here. I didn't want to be in a room. We're doing a sitcom now. You're doing 20 something weeks out the year.
Yeah.
That's half the year.
So
now
insane.
I can do like 8 or 16 weeks. And they like, my agent would be like, he doesn't want the job. He wants to do stand up. Then they'll offer more money. So then I got to where those people were in that room.
Yeah.
By not staying there and doing it step by step, but just saying, I want it, but I'm not going to do it this way. And then now it works out both ways.
So now, because that's part of like what I teach in manifestation, we get mm-hmm. tested and we have to stand in our worth. And you're outlining it perfectly. You're right. Like, no, I'm just going to do comedy if you can't meet me here. It's like, I can do that, but
right.
I really want to do comedy. And if you can meet me here, I'll consider it. Mm-hmm. When you finally said, did you say yes to one of those?
Yeah, it took like, here's a funny thing. When mm-hmm. I quit Black-ish, it was hard because it's like, I knew the show was going to win an Emmy. At some point. It was a good show. That's why I joined it in the first place. But it was hard to quit because you're like, is this the right move? Because this show,
it's going to go.
It's on the air 6 years. So it's good. Everybody who's still there, they are made their life money and everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, then I had to figure out some basic steps. So I'm leaving because I wanted to write a book and try to sell it, and I wanted to do a special. And I said, this is only a mistake leaving Black-ish if I don't pursue what I want to do, the reason for leaving it 100%. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not a mistake to leave, it's a mistake to leave and not go hard to do it. And so then it's like, okay, so then now I have to work and I have to hold myself accountable and do all the things. And then I did it, and then I got the special.
Bam.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've really just outlined the manifestation process. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Wow. And now that you've done the special, mm-hmm. what do you feel like for you, like your soul at a soul level, what does it feel like it's asking for next? Obviously, we know you want to work on another special, but just
on a soul level?
Soul level. What are the things that are coming up for you? Doesn't even have to be career.
Yeah, right.
But it's like, go there, do this. This is what we need and want out of the next 10 years of life or five.
I'm trying to figure out, I want to know, what don't I know about me?
Mm.
Like, what is my total power as a human, as a being, as a soul, and in connection with my body? Mm-hmm. What is my body limiting me from doing spiritually so that I can somehow reach out and do it, you know, like figure out how to do it and know the things that I should know and do the things that what am I capable of that I don't know that I'm capable of physically and spiritually?
The full capacity.
The full capacity.
Do you get little downloads or glimpses of what those could be? Just like little clues of what, maybe all of a
yes
sudden.
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yeah, yes and no.
What would be some of the yeses maybe you've received? I feel that many mm-hmm. people get to a point where they quandra this, especially if they're reaching success.
Where they quandra?
Yeah. Where they're like, what is my actual potential? If I take the box mm-hmm. that I've seen and I've been building towards and I just kind of lift that, mm-hmm. what is the full, real full potential of who I am, my being, my spirituality, mm-hmm. my creativity? Like, where do I... do I not need to age? You know, and we're not talking about like what is that full potential? I think a lot of people, they sit and philosophize this.
Right.
What are some little glimpses that you've received that maybe you, society's telling you something or this industry's telling you something, but you know there's something faster.
It's hard because you think about so, like, it's like asking me what's my favorite musicians right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like put me on the spot.
It is.
It's
you
like,
can't think of any of it, right?
I can't think of it. But,
right.
But because I've had some answers before, yeah. I just don't remember them right now. Well, but I just know I just need to, like, coming up here is good.
Yeah.
And talk to you is good. Like, because I didn't know you were doing this.
Yeah.
You know, you just disappeared and then you hit me up. So even the special leads me back to you.
Yeah.
You know, and then this talk will sink in. Mm-hmm. And then maybe I'll meditate more, at least at the beginning of the year.
Totally.
Before I fall off again.
For sure.
You know what I mean? So.
Well, I think a lot of people actually meditate to exist the way you already exist.
Right.
I think you naturally have an innate presence about you, a presentness about you.
Thanks. And I think when I used to play soccer, it was a form of meditation too.
Totally. Moving meditation.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yes.
What does your family think about what your whole life is?
I mean, before when I did stand up, I didn't tell them. So they just see me disappear.
I call this manifestation boundaries.
Manifestation
because
boundaries.
They might tell you, like, don't do it, be mm-hmm. safe, you know, and just out of love. They're
right,
just
right.
fearful because they want you to have a successful life. Mm-hmm. And so I tell people, just lie and say.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, yeah. It's a good way to do it. Yeah.
Right? And because you'll show them with what you manifest.
Exactly. They might not be able to handle it.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah. And then my parents are from Jamaica, and they're like, my father was like an engineer. They just believe in like just working hard mm-hmm. and you'll get it. So they're not thinking
secure.
And be secure. So they're not thinking. So you can go to college and get a job and then be secure. So go off to do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm not even going to tell them. First of all, I don't know. I'm not good at this yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's working. I'm gonna work hard at it. There are no doubts, but mm-hmm. I want to be a comic before I tell people I'm a comic.
Totally.
You know what I'm saying? So let me just do that and mm-hmm. just go off and do that.
And then what? Now that you've had success and you've written mm-hmm. and all of that, what do they think?
Well, they've known about it for a while. They yeah. found out somehow. They came to a show.
No
and surprised
way.
Me in the middle of the show.
It's like the marvelous Mrs. Maisel or
oh,
whatever.
Right, right. She stole my life.
She totally.
Totally. She can't believe she stole my
her
life.
Her dad ended up at a show.
Oh, word.
And she was making fun of her parents. It was a whole thing. But so
yeah, I didn't make fun of him. I got off stage immediately and introduced the next comic. Yeah. I wasn't going to stay
Whoa.
On stage.
What was their reaction?
They said they found out about it. They not only just came by themselves, they brought family friends to the show. So I see in the middle of the show, they're late and they're in suits and church clothes walking to a Saturday night show.
Oh, and this is in New York?
This is in Long Island, yeah.
Long Island.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
East Side Comedy Club or something like that. I was like, it's a good thing I was a host. So I just cut my set short.
Yeah.
And brought it because I'm not, I wasn't prepared to perform in front of them.
Oh,
I'm
this would be
find
so
my voice.
Stressful.
I'm not, yeah, it's not.
And were they supportive?
Yeah, yeah.
They were, and they've been totally supportive since?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Like my mother helped kind of like, I had like a piece of shit car. So she's like, I'm going to buy a car that you can use to get mm-hmm. to some of these gigs and shit like that. So
she believed in you.
Well, she helped out.
Yeah,
yeah
she
yeah.
must have.
And then she knows me. She knows who I'm raised. I'm not that much different. I am different around my friends, but I'm not that much different. Like, so I won't curse in front of her, but, you know, I think pretty much the same way or act pretty much the same way in front of her.
So she wasn't concerned.
So I just think it's just like, yeah, why not help out?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
They were probably relieved that you weren't just like out doing drugs and partying.
Exactly.
They
yeah.
were like, oh, phew.
So this is what he was doing. Because I'm sure it seemed like I was doing something
shady.
Yeah, shady.
Wow.
For sure.
And what do they think about the no family component? There's never pressure from your mom.
My sisters might say some stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, but now they stop saying it.
Great.
Know? Yeah.
Did you feel like you had any inner child? I say inner child, but like limiting beliefs that maybe you had been raised around or programming that you had to overcome for comedy?
Not for comedy, just continuously just for life, period. Yeah. You know what I mean?
What are some of the biggies?
I just feel, I don't, how do I even put this? Say the question again. Maybe I don't
know. Basically any programming, I mean, especially cultural. I mean, mm-hmm. you lived in literally three different cultures, mm-hmm. essentially, because not only is it the family modeling, the familial mm-hmm. modeling that you witnessed, but you also had to deal with British culture. And then you went back to Jamaican culture where you were mm-hmm. immersed. And then you came to American culture. What have been, we'll even put it this way, what have been some of just the limiting beliefs in yourself that you've had to overcome?
Well, so some of the limiting beliefs was like, so doing the type, doing comedy, like that's a no-no. That's just some shit that you see people do and achieve, but you don't, you're supposed to like, you know, your limiting beliefs, like go to school, get a job, and then just do that, right? Mm-hmm. And another thing is, you're not, if you don't want to get married or have a family, there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, I don't give a damn if you think something's wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, they're like the, what did they say? The Peter Pan or the whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like, nah, that doesn't mean that. It just means it's not for everybody.
Totally.
Why does everything is just not for everybody? Mm-hmm. And I'm one of those people that it's not for, and there's nothing wrong with me. Like, mm-hmm. I clearly know that somehow. And I clearly know I should do comedy somehow. It's the same thing.
Knowing.
Give me that message and that same knowing. So I'm going to do that. And then restrictions is like so you now I'm doing comedy. Then they're like, there's restrictions in comedy. Hey, if you do that type of comedy, you'll get held back or blah, blah, blah. You know, so I'm like, no, I'm doing that type of comedy. And I'm saying those things. And people who say nicer things, maybe further or have more money.
Faster.
But I'm, as long as I'm happy, I'm good.
That's awesome.
You know what I mean?
That's everything.
Yeah.
It's hard in today's society to be that. It is really fucking hard, I feel.
But to be happy?
Well, to just be authentic, like getting mm-hmm. back to that conversation of right. authenticity, it's scary almost, you know, it's especially as somebody who's in the public eye, it's really hard.
It's funny. I told this one person this story. So when I first started, I was friends with a bunch of comics in New York. So then there was this big TV show taping. So comics came from all over the country to New York to tape it. And after the show, one of my friends was like, we're going back to this other comics hotel who just taped, all hang out. You know, comics are excited. They have a hotel in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, blah, blah. So I go there and the guy kind of, I'm there hanging out in this guy's hotel. So then the guy kind of turns on me, the guy's who's actual, not the person who invited me.
The one who had this filming of
who,
the show.
Who filmed the show, and it was his hotel. And he basically screams on me in front of everybody and tells me to get out.
Why?
I'll kind of get to that.
Okay,
I'll get
okay,
to that.
Okay.
So I'm like, I don't even know why.
At the time.
At the time. But I know this is his hotel room, and he's telling me to get out. And he's embarrassed me in front of these people. But it is his hotel room. So I gotta get out.
Yeah.
So I leave.
Yeah.
So I leave, and then maybe a year later, somebody was booked on a show in Germany to do military bases, and they couldn't go. So the promoter said, hey, do you want to go to this shows in Germany and fill in for this person who can't make it? I'm like, yeah. They said, by the way,
it's
this comic that yelled at you is also on the same bill. And I don't know how they knew, you know, are you going to be cool doing shows with this person, traveling the same van, living in the same places for like a week with this person? We know you have an issue. You two have gotten into it before. And I was like, I'll be fine. So then I went, and the whole trip, it was awkward. You know, but we said hi. I just kept to myself and just did my shit, mm-hmm. you know? And then at the end of the last tour, the last day of the tour, he comes to me and says, hey, man, like, I've been watching you the whole tour, and you do your comedy, and you go to the gym, and you eat and you chill and you just talk. And it's like I just observed you and got to know you, and you're not who I thought you were.
Mm.
Like, the reason why I yelled at you in the hotel is because you're friends with a crew of people that I'm not friends with. And then I saw you in my hotel room. So then I went in on you, but I didn't know you. And I've seen you this week, and this is who you are. And then when I went there, I didn't, for the trip, I didn't know what it was going to be like, but I was like, I'm going to just be myself.
Yeah.
And then he saw me being myself and liked me.
Mm-hmm.
And then that told me, just wherever you are, just be yourself.
I love that.
You know what I mean?
I love that.
So then that's why when you say, is it hard to be yourself? It's like, it's the only thing I have.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only thing I have. But there is confidence in me that people like me when I am myself. Mm-hmm. So then I do have that.
You built that.
Yeah.
Or it's like it's always been reinforced.
It's being reinforced. And yeah. Then I do have that to cling to. Like, just like when there's just nothing else going on. It's like, and it's basic. Just first step, be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then just relax in that. And then it works out usually.
That's always the case for me too. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Really... that is the only thing we have, is our authenticity,
mm-hmm.
and being ourselves. It really, and to me, it's pure magnetism. The more we can be in that state,
yeah.
and unblocked in it, you know, like confident in it.
Yeah.
So getting rid of all the stuff that makes us feel not confident. So I think you just put it so perfectly.
Yeah.
I have one last question.
Right.
Do you find, as an artist,
mm-hmm.
that, because it sounds like you started to really surround yourself around other comics that I would deem, like, even what I got to witness, that are more successful, or you're seeing their trajectories, do you find that that helped you believe it was possible for you?
There was a lot of things like that, mm-hmm. along the way. I remember I started at this club called Governors. It's a comedy club in Long Island. So on the weekend, they would allow us open micers to come and watch these big ass shows with these on TV comedians. So we'd go and we just watch everybody. So that was great. Then one week, this guy came. I don't remember his name now. I forgot it then, but it was sold out and he was killing. I think he had a guitar, some musical comic, and he was killing. I was like, this place is packed. I don't even know this guy. If I could just get to this level, I'm good. Like, I don't have to be a household name like everybody else that mm-hmm. I saw. But to be here, to come to a place on a weekend and the place is packed and people are paying to see me. Like, so I was like, that's, I'd at least be happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I can at least achieve that. So then that was inspiring in that way. And then just other things I've wanted to, like, you get a job on a sitcom, you're writing. Now you have to actually write a script and everybody's going to read it, the network, blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, shit, this is what I wanted, but now they're going to read this thing. And I'm like, well, that person I like did it. And that person I like did it. You could do it too. Just write the script. Do line by line. Just write the script. Just do it the way you would write anything funny and put your time into it. And you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
And it just keeps more, like, more and more.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting because I really, instead of visualizing, which mm-hmm. I don't think has ever been that effective for me, but like what you're outlining, and I think it's a really good takeaway for this community mm-hmm. who subscribes to this type of manifestation, we tell them to go find what I call expanders. It's what the podcast is named mm-hmm. after, Expanded. So it's like, go find the people and see to believe, because you identify with them.
Right.
They've been where you are and now they've gone on to go where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see enough of those, your subconscious, it opens up the space
right.
for what you want to come through. But what's so important about what you said is you would kind of do it incrementally. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You would be like, if I could just get to that point, like, that's mm-hmm. awesome. And then
right.
you would build from there, which is sort of, you know, I would say that's the theme of the episode is, A, be yourself and put one foot in front of the other.
Right.
Like, you don't have to go find the whatever, I don't know. Who is the biggest comic in the world right now?
There's a lot of them.
Are there? Like, who are these people?
There's Rogan, there's Chappelle. Sebastian.
Okay.
Do you remember Sebastian?
Is he huge now?
He's huge, man.
What? He was awesome.
He's a great guy.
Great guy.
He's sold out Madison Square Garden like 5 times.
We're talking about like Italian Sebastian.
Yes.
I'm so happy for him. Wow.
He's in The Irishman.
He is. I haven't watched it yet.
And he's in Green Book from last year.
Wow.
That won the Academy Award for Best Film.
I'm so happy for him. Yeah. He was with a lady at the time. Like, mm-hmm. He finally got into a relationship.
And they got married.
They're married. Yeah, they holy have two shit. Kids. What?
That motherfucker just bought Gwen Stefani's old house.
In Los Feliz?
Yeah.
Like, are you like, whichever. Cool.
The $26 million one.
What?
Yes.
Holy shit. I'm so happy for him. Are you looking at that like from your townhouse in Los Feliz? You're like, if I could just get to that level.
I don't even know if I want to get to that level.
That, I know. It's insane.
Yeah. That's really.
Wow.
Yeah. I want to be more secure, but I don't know if I want to get.
That's a whole thing.
Yeah, that's a whole thing.
Wow.
Because I'm worried about anything that would change me from not being me.
And being cool, like being even keeled.
Yeah. So I'm not saying that's what's going on with Sebastian, but like knowing what I know of me, could I handle that?
Yeah.
And if I can't, then it's not worth it.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
I completely understand what you're saying. It is, and I think it's very challenging when people hit certain levels too, like what stardom, it can be whiplash and depression and who am I? And that's exactly what you're getting at, being who I am.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't want to do anything that makes me, I'm trying to find me more. I don't want to do anything that makes it harder to get to. Yeah.
I completely understand what you're saying. I'm so proud of Tiffany Haddish as well.
Oh, yeah. She's crazy.
It's amazing. Because she was doing like the midnight spot and just has gone. And she was also somebody who was always so lovely and beautiful. And
positive.
Real.
Positive. And meditating and manifesting and shit like that. Yeah.
And I saw this little thing. We have a Facebook group in the community where people who are doing this work will like, you know, kind of bounce off things with each other and all that. And somebody posted this thing and I just happened to be the person who watched it. And it was the relationship, which I wasn't aware of, between her and Kevin Hart. How do you know that? Like that they go way back. And,
yeah. Because we used to do a sketch show at the Laugh Factory, all of us together.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
When would you guys do it?
Like probably like Wednesday night.
Oh, that's why I didn't work that.
Yeah. And then she was like, she was broke.
Totally.
And lived in a car. I got known Tiffany through all the phases of all the things that she's doing. Yeah.
I'm so happy. Just for all of you guys. They're just killing it.
Yeah.
And I just think that's great. Who else is just out there going nuts right now?
Whitney's still killing it.
She's just on all levels. Yeah.
There's just so many people.
That book was great that she wrote.
No, I didn't read it, but I guess I got to read it. Yeah.
So transparent about her codependency and everything she's been through. Just really inspiring stuff.
Yeah.
You guys are also inspiring. I'm just so happy for you all.
You too. You killed it.
Thank you.
You're doing it. This is pretty amazing.
Thanks a lot.
I'm definitely amazed and like, shit, I'm down to learn from you.
Vice versa. Ian, tell us where we can find you.
Oh, where you can find me at Ian Edwards Comic on Instagram and also on Twitter, Facebook. And IanEdwardsComedian.com.
What about your special? Where are we watching that?
Special is streaming on Comedy Central.
It is on. So, but can we see it on Netflix or anything else? I knew it was a Comedy Central special.
Not right now. Like Amazon.
Okay.
Comedy Central. Maybe Hulu.
Okay.
I forgot where else they told me you could find it.
Great.
But yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
If you found this episode expansive, feel free to leave us a 5-star review to automatically enter yourself into winning 1 year of the Pathway membership. We announce once a month a winner, and we've just announced our last two in a few episodes back. Have a great weekend.